Welcome, everyone, to Critical Success, the One-Shot Companion Podcast. I'm your Game Master, James D'Amato. I've been role-playing for about a decade now, and I've also been improvising for even longer. Collaborative storytelling is my thing. Now, like a lot of gamers, I spend a good amount of time on Reddit. Most of that time is dedicated to the role-playing subreddits, like RPG and Pathfinder and D&D and all that good stuff. Every day on those subreddits, I see the same question. Hey guys, I'm new to DMing. Does anybody have any advice? Thankfully, the RPG subreddits are full of super helpful and wonderful people who have tons of great advice for new GMs. I know there's a lot of pressure on new GMs, especially if you're stepping into the role from the position of a player. You've had somebody there in front of you every time you've played role-playing games who seem to pull it off pretty flawlessly. So it can be intimidating to take that over. And even though you have a lot of great advice coming at you, it can be a lot to juggle, especially if you can't see it all in action. That's why I started Critical Success. I want to use the One Shot podcast as a resource to help new game masters, to show them the concepts behind good role-playing in action. Critical Success is for people who are new to role-playing or experienced players who really want to start thinking about the theory that goes into good gaming. I'll be explaining different concepts in improv, writing, and general storytelling to help you up your game. With that introduction out of the way, let's get into it. Let's start at the beginning. How do you decide what kind of game you're going to run? A mistake that I see a lot of first-time dungeon masters make is over-preparation. One thing you learn pretty quickly as a GM is that players almost never cooperate. I have only seen things go according to plan rarely, and it usually happens during a one-shot play session where the GM has run it before with several different groups. People are hard to control, and there are a lot of creative people who are sitting at your table who are going to make decisions that surprise you. That's just a guarantee. So many rookie GMs put hours of hard work into elaborate stories and campaigns before they even see their party in action. And how do players thank them for all their hard work? Of course, by wanting to do something else. But you can't really write an adventure for a band of outlaws and expect the ranger your buddy built based on the Punisher to just go along with it. Half-orc Frank Castle is going to kill all of your recurring NPCs. Even the ones the party is supposed to like. Because he's role-playing. There is no way to tell what kind of adventure you're going to have until you meet your party. That might sound like a piece of super obvious advice, but a lot of people overlook it when they get caught up in the stress of having to take over as dungeon master. After all, you're supposed to be the be-all end-all of the game. You know everything that's going to happen and you control everything, right? Of course that's not right. That's not a realistic expectation to have of yourself or anyone else. Banish that notion from your head immediately. The first step to creating a good game is understanding party balance. By party balance, I don't mean balancing the classes to make sure you have a wizard and a fighter. I mean understanding the actual play styles of your friends in the group. In improv, there are three basic play types that we refer to as the head, the heart, and the X factor. Reducing your friends to three basic types might seem like oversimplifying, but that's kind of what we want to do. We want to take the complex process of being a GM and make it simple. So let's take a look at the party we have in one shot and try to sort them into these categories. First up is the head. The head is an intellectual player who makes decisions based on logic. Heads tend to ask a lot of questions, speculate on the story, and they thrive on puzzles. In our game, Kat Murphy, playing Inwe Vareve Arcaeus, is absolutely a head.
Let me think. Anything else? Nah, I already used up the animate rope for the day. Oh, I could put us on a floating disc!
Only from a head will you hear the words, I already used up my animate rope for the day, followed by an overly excited, oh, I could use Tensor's floating disc! To make a head happy, you need to include sections in your story that require thought to get through. You'll notice in that section of our most recent episode that Kat was prepared to deal with several traps that I had not planned for them to encounter. If you want, you can literally sit back and watch your head speculate and just say yes when they come up with an answer that you think is fun for your story. Half of the writing is done for you with a head in the group. If you really want to go above and beyond to please your head, take a look at their character sheet. And this really goes for anybody in your party. Just look at some of the areas that they have put resources into. There are people who go through that equipment list or those lower level spells and really put thought into what they want for that day. If they encounter a situation where they have to use that 2 gold climbing kit in your session, they will be happy because they will feel like they were prepared. And you will be happy because they're obviously having a good time because of something that you did. Now let's move on to the heart. The heart is an emotionally grounded player. It's somebody who really sticks to their character and makes decisions based on the emotional reactions their character would be having during play. They can also make decisions based on metagame emotions that they're having. Hearts can either be the easiest or the most difficult player in the group to deal with. That is because hearts know what their character wants. If the story happens to coincide with that character want, it's going to be a breeze because they will pull the party through that plot point. However, if the story you're presenting is in direct conflict with what they want, they're probably going to pull the game in another direction. Sometimes it can seem like it's hard to reconcile player wants with where you want the story to go. But I think it's actually easy to marry them together if you just take a second to think about it. So let's look at the heart in our group, Patrick O'Rourke, or Remy Lionsbeard, the fighter and leader of the party.
A ton of damage and actually take him down.
Yeah!
Yes!
Yes! Finally good for something.
I serve a purpose.
Pat made it clear that he wanted to do one thing and one thing only. And that was kill zombies. Funny thing about this game, it was 90% improvised. Obviously, I had to build the characters beforehand, and I built the boss fights to correspond to the characters as well. That vampire they fought in session 3 was actually going to be the final boss. But when Pat made it clear that he wanted to fight zombies, and only zombies, and that was pretty much the strong desire in the group, I had to restructure the game. So I gave the vampire different spells that would annoy the party rather than kill it, and I changed the final boss fight to fit his needs. Why? Because it makes the character happy when you have the story reflect the things that character wants to do. Pat said it himself after he cut down that zombie. I finally serve a purpose. That's very indicative of what he thought his character role was. He was there to kill zombies, and because I made that happen, I helped make the game a little bit more special for him. Hearts are extraordinarily easy to please, because they often state exactly what they want for their character. That either is going to be someone like Pat, who constantly asks if we're about to fight zombies, or it could be more subtle, a player who hands you a backstory with a very specific goal in it. I once played a half-dragon sorcerer, whose only goal for the game was to meet his father. And at one point, we traveled to the dragon continent, where supposedly all the dragons in the setting lived. I looked all over that continent for my father, only to be told by the DM that he would not be appearing in this game. It was a crushing disappointment. I had given my DM one plot thread, and he didn't think of it as important enough to follow through on. You guys, that decision seriously affected my feels. Looking back, I still feel that was a disappointment that could have easily been avoided with a little bit of roleplay. Just giving a little nod to the ideas that characters propose to you can be the difference between your game being a disappointment and one of the most awesome experiences ever. That brings us to one of the most intimidating player types ever, the X Factor. X Factors were explained to me by comedian Rachel Mason at Second City. She put it simply, the X Factor exists to fuck shit up. That's not to say they ruin scenes or games, but they make decisions that are surprising and sort of out of left field. If your game goes off on a tangent or loses focus, it's probably because an X Factor is at play. This doesn't mean the X Factor is ruining your game. On the contrary, the X Factors can sometimes provide most of the fun of the game.
I think we can all easily identify the X Factor in my game, and that would be Thadric Toscobble, played by Zach Mast, also known as Cobb, and he is our halfling rogue.
You notice some small holes that are dotting, like, the countryside.
Ooh.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Oh, guys, this is it. This is my chance to shine. Ah, I dismount. I run towards the nearest hole.
Wait. Many things live in holes.
Throughout the course of play, Cobb made a lot of decisions that I did not plan for, that the group didn't plan for, and were hard to act on. In a game where everybody was funny, Cobb was the comic relief. That's a vital role. Even in intensely dramatic games, you need somebody who will do or say the unexpected thing to break the tension, just a little bit, so that it's not constant mounting pressure. Those sorts of games can be exhausting without a little bit of X Factor. Playing to the X Factor is a lot like playing to the head. You're trying to justify their ideas within your world. Thankfully, most games, even if they're not D&D, take place in a world with a little bit of magic and whimsy. I mean, even your Call of Cthulhu campaigns allow for situations that don't make sense. An X-Factor player can thrive in these situations. Cobb made a point of licking doorknobs, so I gave him doorknobs to lick. I didn't know exactly what was going to happen once he had licked a doorknob, but I knew that I had to bring it into the story at some point. It was just something that happened over and over, therefore it had to be rewarded by me tying it into the story in some way. Because we had to rush the last couple of episodes, I'm not too pleased with exactly where that story ended up, but just doing it made the game a little bit better and more cohesive. Your best bet for dealing with an X Factor is simply to allow for some flexibility within your universe. It is okay to be in a serious setting and have a non-serious location. The real world is a pretty grim place, but that doesn't mean we don't have the occasional laugh along the way. You just have to decide when it's distracting from your game and when it's adding levity to it. That's something that will come with more experience. Your first game is most likely going to be more humorous than it is dramatic in order to fit the need of flexibility. And if you're running a full-fledged campaign, you can always make it more dramatic over time, as you gain more experience and your players start to understand what kind of world they're playing in. Now, of course, not every player can be sorted into these three neat categories. Some of them are going to exhibit more than one of these traits, which I think is a good time to shift our focus to Aldove Battleheart, played by John Patrick Cohen. He was the cleric of our group, and he exhibited traits of what I would say are a heart and an X factor. People rich enough not to need to work every day.
Ugh. Makes me sick with all of their money.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the monastery, we didn't have any money. All we had was Jesus. And by Jesus, I mean the Thorag, who we most commonly call Jesus, which is Dwarven for Thorag. So, you might be hearing me say Jesus several more times, but just know what I mean is Thorag.
John kept his character grounded to his Dwarven code and made a bunch of really silly decisions along the way. It turned out to make a great game, but it also helped me understand ultimately where my party balance was. I had Cobb, who was undoubtedly an X Factor. I had Remy, who was a huge heart with a little bit of X. And I had Aldove, who was a fine balance. And finally, Inway, who was a head. Most of the party was shifted towards an X Factor heart playstyle. So the world that they lived in was X-Factor and heart-based. Most of the NPCs I came up with had strong emotional grounding in a light-hearted world. And that's something that really grooved with the party for the most part. The only one who I had to make special allowances for was Kat. I needed to insert a few heady puzzles so that she would be satisfied during play as well. It also helped that Kat had more experience than most of the party, so she knew how to make her own fun. Of course, Heart, Head, and X Factor don't just describe the players, they describe the GM as well. Personally, I'm a head and an X factor, with a pretty even balance. I like to create elaborate worlds that call back to a lot of the things that my players have brought up earlier in the game, and I like it to generally be a silly place. That means I like to think through a lot of the issues that come up in my games, and explain them with elaborate and absurd scenarios. As a player, if you recognize the playstyle of your GM and your fellow players, you can actually find ways to make the game more fun for yourself and the people around you. It's not just the GM who controls sessions. Sometimes, going along with somebody else's idea will help enhance the experience for everyone. One of the most beautiful moments I've observed in any game happened on this very podcast.
I don't think I've ever trusted anyone more, and when this adventure is over, I'd like to go to church with you.
What? What? What?
I think that Kate and Kyleen is just a myth.
Yes!
And Toreg is the true savior.
Yes, that's what I've been trying to tell you!
It's easy to get wrapped up in your own character story, but there are a lot of things happening around you. Everyone has desires for their character, and it's not just the GM's responsibility to see them realize those desires. As a player, you do have a role in helping your friends have a good time. You can do something small and role-playing oriented, like acknowledge your fellow character's religion. Or you can do something a bit bigger, like not trying to get the final hit on the boss character who has been established as a rival for one of your fellow players. It doesn't take much to invest in someone's story, and I can guarantee that it will enhance the experience for that player and pretty much everybody at the table. This all goes for your GM, too. Your incredibly patient and long-suffering GM. It's very fun to drive a plot off the rails. However, that creates a lot of extra work for the GM. You're going to find it more rewarding if you try and play into what your dungeon master is trying to make you do. Only the most garbage, dickish GMs will punish you for playing into their story. And I swear I'll make an episode of Critical Success just to yell at those people so you can send it to them passive-aggressively. I recommend to everybody when a game seems to be stalling to just take stock of the situation and look at whether or not your GM actually wants you to do this. Sometimes it's okay to push forward with that instinct and go off book. Other times, your GM has spent hours crafting an intricate combat that he or she believes you will really enjoy, and it's best to just let the story happen. It might be fun! Understanding player types and how to cater to them will help you on your way to telling the stories that you want to tell, and making sure that your games are fun for everybody sitting at the table. Each session, you should have at least one aspect of your game cater to a specific player type. I also recommend using the first couple of play sessions with a new group as an opportunity to test the waters and see where the group mind is at. There's no point in putting hours and hours of prep work into designing a universe that you don't know your party even wants to play in. It's okay to take a breath and let yourself go with the flow just a little bit. If you are going to prepare something like a dungeon or a combat. Ignore the story, at least for the first couple of sessions, until you understand your party. Remember, the people at your table know you're new to GMing, and they're still playing with you anyway. That means they don't expect a perfect experience, but they do expect to have fun, and it is easy to do that. All you have to do is listen to them. Well, that's it for Critical Success this week. I don't know how often I'll do these, and hopefully next time I'll have somebody with me to discuss these issues, because talking for 20 minutes straight is kind of a pain in the neck. But if you liked it, let us know in the comments and I'll do more. If there's a particular issue you're grappling with, you can always email me at jamesdamatoismagic@gmail.com. I might even design an episode around it, pulling examples from one shot so I can explain how to deal with the particular issue you're interested in. Well, thanks for listening. I hope some of you found this helpful, or at least interesting. I'm also looking for new intro and outro music. If you want to suggest a band or a song that you think would be appropriate for Critical Success, send it my way at jamesdamatoismagic@gmail.com. Right now, I'm hoping for something hip-hop or punk. For now, the music swelling up over my voice is Be Your Own Pet with Adventure. I'll see you next time on One Shot.